Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be discussing a subject that affects millions of women around the world on so many different levels. My guest today is Felicity Okolo, and her book is called It's My Life and I'm in Charge. Felicity, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Donna. Thank you for having me.
Now, you're in England. Are you in London?
Yes, I am.
Well, when I was talking to my audience about your coming onto the air, I mentioned that you were in London, and this is something that I felt was quite significant. Here in the United States, the subject of domestic violence comes up quite frequently, but I have learned that it's not often discussed openly because there is so much, stigma attached to it, and there's so much ignorance and misunderstanding. And your story was especially poignant to me because you are a woman who came from a cultural environment that literally demanded obedience to the family's wishes. Felicity, I would love for you to tell your story about your early years and how it was you were made to marry a man you didn't want to marry.
Well, it's fairly simple, really. I was 19 years old, and ex-teacher from secondary school told me about her brother in London who wanted a wife, that I meet all the criteria, really. And I said no, because I didn't know him. And I didn't believe anything they told me, because I didn't know, I wasn't sure what if they told me was right or not. But my parents thought it was a good idea, so within a few months, I was married to this man, within 6 months, really, from his sister telling me about the man to actually when he came to Nigeria and we got married. And
all right, now I want to stop you there because you are mentioning something that's very significant here, and that is you were in Maiduguri, Borno State, Nigeria, and I may not be pronouncing that correctly. So
you did great. You did great.
Oh, wonderful. But this is something I don't think people understand, and I want you to go into this a little bit. What was the cultural background? Because you were in school. You were, relative to many other people in your environment, you were very well educated.
I was in university, actually. I was in my first year in university, and apart from being young, 19, I was in love with somebody else. I was from the southern part of Nigeria. I'm Igbo, and my boyfriend then was Hausa. So, and he didn't believe that people from where I was from actually do have arranged marriages, because it's actually known more in the northern part of Nigeria that arranged marriages occur. So me too, I didn't know that from where I'm from, people actually have to have marriages arranged for them. So it was a shock to me. I was in love with somebody else, and here I am going to marry somebody else. It was heartbreaking, and I just didn't know. I felt like I was going to die. But I felt, okay, let me just go for the sake of my mother, because I felt I have to be obedient to my parents. I didn't want to disobey them. I thought maybe they knew better. I was 19, and they're much older. Maybe they knew better. So I thought I'll just go, but I didn't want to do it at all.
Now, you really didn't know this man, and this was, again, an arranged marriage.
Yeah.
You ended up leaving Nigeria. Now, tell us about your cultural aspect relative to the position of the woman with the family and what your rights were. Did you have any rights with, you know, in your cultural environment? And
it is, yeah, I think Rights of a woman. Very, very little. Mm-hmm. Actually, it depends. It depends on the relationship, because women are kind of free from southern part of Nigeria to an extent. And they are known to, they're supposed to obey their husbands. But that's not really what, in my own family, it was different in the sense that my father raised us to be free, to have a say. And so it didn't quite apply in my household. I grew up in a loving home where my mom, my father, they love themselves and they have a misunderstanding, which is normal, but no violence. And as women, we were free to, there was no, men have to do certain things and women were not allowed to do certain things in the house. We all, like in my house, my mom made sure that all the boys did chores like the girls. They cooked as well. While in some households, it's only the girls that do the cooking and cleaning, and the boys, you know, just become men and just grow up to have their wives behave like slaves, serving them. So it was different, and it depends on the family. It wasn't that strict in the southern part of Nigeria, maybe more so in the north where women don't have much rights or much say in the household. So being raised in such an environment, I felt that, you know, I have rights and I have a say to contribute to my family, especially if I'm a wife in the house. And then being married to this man, I realized, oh my God, there's no such right, there's no such freedom. I have to be implicitly obedient to him. That was his exact words, implicitly obedient to him. I had to say, whatever he says is what I should do. I couldn't go anywhere. I'm not allowed to have friends, I'm not allowed to go to church, I'm not allowed to go to college, I'm not allowed to speak to anyone unless he lets me do it.
Now, with your parents, this was something that your father, you did not like the teacher that was the sister of this man, and there were so many things there. Why do you think your family was so anxious to marry you off? Why was this so important? In today's world, I mean, your father was a very, very kind man. He raised you and in the environment that you were raised in. Like you said, it was a loving family. You were to have a say. Do you think it was because of the insistence on your mother? Was she concerned that you were 19 years old, you weren't married and having babies? What was it that was so stressful? Why did they feel it was imperative you get married?
I think because they thought I will have a better lifestyle out of the country. That was one major thing. And yeah, I think so. And secondly, my father knew my ex-husband's sister so well because they were in college together. And she was nice when he knew her. So he thought, well, he believed that the brother would be nice, based on the sister's behavior and attitude. And she was my teacher in secondary school, so she was nice as well. Nice to the extent, you know, nice as being nice the way she knows, but I didn't like her because she was very strict, and that's just it. She wasn't really a bad person to me. So my father believed that since she's nice, her brother will be nice. And since her brother lived in London, I was in Nigeria, we were from working class family, they believed that if I go, they will have maybe, I'm thinking, you know, they will have less children to look after. I'll be well looked after there. I'll have better lifestyle because I always wanted to live abroad anyway. So they thought this was the opportunity for me to go.
Interesting. And it really makes sense when you talk about that. And I think it's important to discuss that for this reason. Mm. When we are able to understand what the motivations are behind people's choices, it can empower us to understand how we have a right to make choices. Now, you end up going to London and will call your husband Simon, who is now your ex-husband. But Simon ends up being absolutely hideous. I mean, absolutely hideous. And you got pregnant very quickly.
Actually, I was pregnant within 3 weeks of getting married to him in Nigeria. Very quickly, I mean, I've only known him for 2 weeks, and we got married. Within a few weeks, I was pregnant. And came to London. I was 6 months pregnant when I came to London. And within 3 months, I had the first baby. Actually, a month after I came to London, the abuse began. It began with verbal abuse. And after having the baby, 3 months, the very physical abuse happened that I never knew someone could be beaten so badly that they couldn't move. That's what I experienced.
Mm-hmm. Now, here you are in London. He's absolutely isolating you in every way possible, which is typical of an individual that is the abuser. They are wanting to hide what they're doing. Here you are, and, you know, this, it's just absolutely awful. You are literally a prisoner. He doesn't want you to talk to anybody, but fortunately you did do a little bit of that. But what happened when your baby came along? I mean, this is really a very difficult time because he just kept getting worse and worse.
Yeah. I mean, when the baby came, because I was isolated in a strange country, it was February when the baby arrived. Within 3 months, it was probably now early spring. And I was still getting used to my environment. Then I was 6 months in the country. I was all alone. All I did was clean the house, cook for him, myself and the baby, and clean after the tenants because we had lodgers. We had a three-bedroom house, so we occupied a dining room, which he made into a bedroom, and a living room. So we had the three bedrooms let out. I had to clean after the lodgers then and cook and clean. That's all I did. And because I was stuck indoors all day, if I had to go to surgery, for the doctor, for the child's clinic or appointment, he accompanies me. So he kind of accompanies me everywhere. He's always there. And the abuse got so worse that one day I couldn't take it anymore when it passed on to the child. This incident happened when he locked me out of the living room. The baby was screaming wet. He was wet, his nappy was wet, and I didn't have access to access my baby's nappy, and he was hungry. I was so mad that I decided to knock down the door. That's when he came in and began to beat me up. Because I felt he can abuse me, I could tolerate that, but not extend the abuse to my baby, to his baby. It just did not make sense. And since then, after the first physical incident, that one of the lodgers, actually a couple, rescued me, or else I probably would have been killed because I couldn't move. I was laying down on the floor, and he kept hitting me. He didn't even want to stop. I didn't know about domestic violence as of then. I just thought, okay, if I survive today, I don't know. So that's really what happened, why I had to, basically I was defending my child from his abuse, because he later on went on to abuse them, actually, my children.
Now, let's back up for just a minute, because you have some statistics in your book.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, for those of you listening, it's called It Is My Life and I'm in Charge. And my guest today is Felicity Okolo, and she's in London, England. You said, in the United Kingdom, 2 women a week are killed by a current or former male partner. 1 in 4 women will experience domestic violence in their lifetime, and many of these women will experience it more than once. And 1 incident of domestic violence is reported to the police every minute. And then you give stats, and this is from statistics in accordance with the findings of the Women's Aid Charity in London. And in the U.S., 1 in 4 women will experience domestic violence in their lifetime, according to a National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And a domestic violent act occurs every 15 seconds in the United States, resulting in about 2.5 million women experiencing domestic violence each year. And on average, 3 women are killed every day in the U.S. due to domestic violence, according to the National Organization for Women. Now, these are appalling statistics. They really are. And
yeah.
It has been my experience as a counselor that many women will go through this over and over and over again. It doesn't make any sense, but many times they just think this is what they're supposed to go through. There's often something wrong with them. What was it with you that, how did you finally become aware of the fact that this was not to be your life? I mean, you're beaten so badly that your neighbors rescued you. What happened next?
Yeah, because after the first incident, when I had the first baby, I just knew, oh my God, this, for me to experience abuse at this age, God, this is no life. Actually, I said to my ex, if you hit me one more time, I'm going to leave you. Because I didn't grow up in an abusive environment. But then he then laughed. He thought it was a joke. I would continue living together. I didn't want to leave. I thought, okay, let me give him a second chance. Hopefully he will change, like many other women do. Second baby arrived. He didn't change. He continued until I watched a program from Oprah episode about domestic violence, where I knew that domestic violence occurred in the UK or in America, the rest of the world, not just in my home. And I knew the police could help me. So I thought, okay, I knew now what to do. Even though I was afraid of leaving him because I didn't have money, I didn't have any qualification or education, and my immigration status was now in limbo because I had 6 months visa when I came to join him. So I couldn't leave because I wasn't sure what to do or what would happen to me. So all these factors, complicated things. And also there's a stigma of having children alone, which people are kind of afraid of thinking, a young Catholic girl, not wedded in the church, what will the church say, what will my parents say, what will everybody else say, you know. It went on until I just came to a stage where I thought, you know, these things don't matter. What matters is me, is my life. Do I want to live with stigma? Do I want to live with shame? Do I want to be deported? Do I want to be alive? I had to choose. I wanted to be alive. I wanted to raise my children in a happy home. So I decided the only way to do that is to get out of this situation. I don't care if I'm deported. I don't care if I have stigma. I don't care what my parents say. I don't care if they abandon me. I want to be alive and happy. I knew I could get a better marriage. This is no marriage where I'm, this is like hell. It was like hell. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had to pray to God, please get me out of here somehow. And when the last incident occurred, I just knew I have to get out somewhere. I took him to court after my neighbors rescued me, got an injunction against him. 6 weeks after the injunction expired, he began threatening me. Then one night, I just had to run. And as I ran out of the house that night, he chased me, didn't see me. The next day, I thought, never going back to that house. And 2 days later, I went back with the police to pick up my children. Like I say to many people, never ever go back to the property or to approach your abuser alone without police escort. There's so many women who've been killed. I was just watching the news yesterday and today, same thing, women being killed by the partners when they've gone back to the house to pick up their belongings. It is too risky.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's how
I agree.
Left. I wanted to live.
You make some comments, and with each of the chapters in your book, you have notations. One is that when someone's an abuser, they will isolate you socially. They will little by little keep you away from people so that they can't see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll put the blame on you for making this your fault. And abusers are going to always point their finger at something or someone else. And then they'll always apologize after you've been beaten to a pulp, saying, gee whiz, I'm sorry, I just had a bad day at the office or whatever. And there's absolutely no concern for who or what the abuse is going to be done to. It could be your children, and it could be you in addition to your children, it could be the animals. There's just horrific stuff that's done. Now, for you, when you finally became aware of it, and again, it was because of Oprah's show that you happened to see some, because he tried to fix the television so it wouldn't work, so you couldn't watch anything. He really tried to make you so isolated that you wouldn't think, you wouldn't do. And then you found out also he had been married before. You found out a lot of things. But one of the real difficult obstacles that you had to overcome was the fact that your parents wanted you to stay in the marriage, even though you told them what was going on.
Yeah. I guess they were coming from the maybe traditional cultural aspect or from the stigma point, how can my child leave a marriage over some little fight? And I tried to explain to them that they don't live with me. They don't know what's going on in this country. They are 7 or 6 hours away from where I am. They don't have a clue. And when I realized they wouldn't understand, so I say to them, you know, it doesn't matter, I just want to be alive. And then they say to me, if you don't go back to him, don't call us your parents. And I say to them, you did it once to me when I refused to marry him. You asked, you told me, if I don't marry him, I shouldn't call him my parents. It worked that time, it will never work again.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically abandoned me for 3 years. I was on my own. I didn't mm-hmm. have any contact with my parents for 3 years. That was extremely painful. Because here I had to survive alone in a foreign country, no family, no helper, no one. Then there was no many, we didn't have many domestic violence organizations around to support. It was in the early 90s,
mm-hmm.
not as much as we have today. I wasn't aware of any domestic violence help charities available. So I struggled to survive on my own, to get help, to recover on my own. It was extremely hard and painful.
Now, you were able to go back to school. You
yeah.
had a health visitor. That's how you describe, we would call them social services here in the
okay.
United States, but you call them health visitors. And you had some assistance that enabled you to survive, but you have a very poignant story about this one particular Christmas, and there was a charity called the Barnados Charity, and it was 3 days before Christmas. You had no money for anything. You didn't even have money for food.
No.
And they found out about you, and by golly, the children got presents, and you were given some rice. You had food, and you said you ate, you and your children went to church that Christmas day, fixed the rice afterwards, and all four of you, because you had three children, all four of you ate a meal of rice in peace. And you said, It was just absolutely glorious. And you had, you know, these are situations that often people don't understand unless they've gone through it themselves. When you have a sense of pride, you don't want to beg. You don't want to let people know many times that you're in such difficult circumstances. But you found that by speaking up and talking to some people, that it really helped, because there were people that did care, that did want to assist you.
Of course, Donna, of course. Because to me, I don't see why should anyone be ashamed or afraid of telling something that hurts you. Why? You did nothing wrong. Somebody hurts you. You cry. To me, telling someone is like crying when you are in pain. So I didn't feel any shame. I told people, and I wasn't afraid of asking when I needed help. I wasn't afraid of begging if I needed to beg. You know, I made sure that I told people, and people were so helpful and nice. I didn't even have to beg. People just mm-hmm. knew that I was working hard to look after my children, and they would bring things to my door. I didn't have to ask them. They just brought things to my door. And it just goes to show that people are very kind. Oh, they're very nice, supportive people out there, if only you let them support you or help you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, mm-hmm. you do. And that Christmas, as you're just reading that passage, you know, I just feel tears, you know, watering my eyes, remembering that, of course, it was peaceful, because Christmas was spent with him before. It's either him yelling, we are demanding things, Christmas present, and blah, blah, blah. But this Christmas, we didn't get present. My kids got second-hand presents from Bernardo's charity. It was nice. I got nothing. But the fact that we spent Christmas in peace, the children did not hear any shouting. That was just enough.
Mm-hmm.
That was enough, yeah.
Now, you, after you took the legal action against your husband, and he always was threatening you, he just, it was something you had to have the strength of will to say, no, this is my life, and I am in charge of it, and our children, you're a jerk, but our children are going to have a good life, too. You took up the martial arts. You decided that you needed to reinforce something, and I think that's a marvelous discipline. And you make a comment in your book, if a woman doesn't have the proper rules and boundaries in place, then it becomes easier for a man to abuse her. Now, you have a site, you have a lot of information regarding domestic abuse, that this has become a part of your life. You ended up graduating. I had to chuckle because you were always willing to work, But you said you had an experiment of working as a cleaner in a bank for a month. You cleaned toilets for the entire month. You vowed never to do such a thing again or to let any circumstance occur that would force you to ever do it again. Boy, what motivation.
Yeah, now, that's so true, really, yeah. I had to do certain things. I had to try certain things out. And few weeks after I left, and that's when I began applying to go to university, I didn't know where the energy came from. I believe I'm very mentally strong and emotionally strong, and I have spiritual backup. I have my God, and very good, strong believer in God, that He will provide for me as long as I continue to remain steadfast and work hard because of my children, and He did. So that's really how I was able to achieve all that. And I believe any other woman can do that with the right beliefs, right support people. Right now, there's so many support groups out there, organizations to help women. They don't have to do it on their own. And this is what I do now. I call myself the domestic violence eradication coach and expert. So my life is dedicated to seeing domestic violence eradicated, because I watch the news every day and it seems to be increasing every day. That is not nice. It hurts me to see that a lot of women still do not get help they deserve. They don't still seek help. They don't still tell people. They should stop being afraid. There's nothing to fear, really. I know that your life is at risk, but it's more at risk when you stay with your abuser or when you don't report him hitting you or abusing you. It gets worse.
Yes, it does. And I think that you touched on it earlier, that many times the individual feels ashamed. They feel that they're going to be looked down upon by others. And it takes a real level of personal courage to say just exactly what you put on the title of your book. It's my life and I'm in charge. And that mm-hmm. no one has the right to abuse, regardless of cultural background. But that's part of a process you went through, and that's why it's so wonderful that you've decided to be in this arena with other women that maybe have other cultural aspects that have taught them they don't have any rights. And believe me, here in the United States, and you wouldn't think that that would be the case, but here in the United States, we have a lot of women dependent on the cultural environment of the societal situation they have come from. They feel like they don't have rights. This is how they have been indoctrinated. And that this is something that, gee whiz, maybe their mother was abused, or maybe there's other members of the family that have been abused, and they just tell them to suck it up. This is all the way you're supposed to do it. And I go, uh-uh, no way. No mm-hmm. way. You have the right to be an individual. And if the worst-case scenario is that those people that say that they love you say, well, stay there and just endure it because that's what you're supposed to do, and I don't care what a person's religious background is, it doesn't make any difference. That is not justifiable, period.
No.
It is not. And I think in your book you put so much good information forward, and you were able to get citizenship in the United Kingdom, you were able to have your children safe. They, in turn, as they grew older, because the father kept trying to come in and would just be so destructive, but they made a choice. They said, no, we don't want anything to do with him.
True.
And so you finally were able to get this man out of your life.
Yeah. I mean, he had to stay out or else he will destroy him, because what women don't know is that you live in the abuse, the abuse doesn't really stop, because they keep, especially if you have children with them, they mm-hmm. have to use some tactics to get involved in your life, to disrupt your life, and that's kind of abusing you still, if you let them. Mm-hmm. And that is why you have to create rules and boundaries, not just for him, for also any other man you want to get involved with, so that you know what you want in a relationship, and you know how to behave, and what will tolerate and what you will not tolerate. To me, I just knew if he wants to see the children, yes, you can. If you abuse the opportunity, it gets withdrawn, which he did. It was withdrawn and later reinstated. The kids now have grown to know his patterns, promise and failing, putting the mom down. Then they decided, no more. You don't abuse our mom, insult her in front of us, and you don't even keep your promise. You never do anything for us. You just insult our mom, who looks after us and who genuinely loves us. you don't stay away from us. Mm-hmm. So they said, no, yeah.
I think this is a wonderful book. I think anyone that may know of someone that is going through this pattern, and for whatever reason they feel like they might deserve it, or they are so terrified, they're scared to death. And fear is one of our biggest enemies. And Felicity, I want to give out your website. It's Felicity Okolo. That's FelicityOkolo.com. And you can contact her if you like through her website. And I think that her book is so well done that her story, written in her manner and in her way, shares with you a reality, and I'll quote from her book, "Domestic violence is the same all over the world. Domestic violence is not a respecter of race, age, culture, demographic location, position, or status. It doesn't need to be. Will it ever totally disappear? I don't know that we can say that. But only if we are awake, alert, and aware are we going to be able to perhaps not have it in our lives, but also maybe help someone who is going through it understand that they have a choice. It is not something they have to live through." Felicity Okolo, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today, and I compliment you again for using your experience to help liberate other people that are going through this. And again, you can go to her website, FelicityOkolo.com. Felicity, thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you so much, Donna. Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hello, this is Donna. Welcome back. And if you want to give me a buzz today, just give me a call at 888-627-6008. I'll be happy to do a reading with you on the air. If you're a first-time listener, all I need is your first name or initial, and then after that, just relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then, well, you can ask me a question about anything or anyone that is pertinent to you. Again, toll-free worldwide, 888-627-6008. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Dr. Richard Gentry about a subject that is very significant to me. It's raising confident readers. Now, it may not seem like a big deal to those of you who are listening, but let me tell you something. It is a big concern to me when I find how illiterate many young people are. They might have a reading skill, if we're lucky, up to the third grade. And reading is something that is vitally important. It enables you to reach out to the world, and I know with our technology today that sounds like, well, that's not necessary. In fact, I've even heard some teachers say that that's not necessary. But reading makes a difference. It develops the brain, but more than that, it gives you an opportunity to explore many things. And learning how to read and comprehend, it does take practice. It just doesn't happen. And all too many people that are out looking for jobs today are not good readers. And I can't tell you how many individuals I have met that will say to me, gee, I'm lucky if I read 3 books a year. When they hear that I read 400 to 600 a year, they go, whoa, how do you do that? I pick up the book and I read. Of course, it's a passion for me. I don't expect most people to do what I do. But it's something that's extremely important. So this is something that I think is a good subject to talk about. And then on Thursday, we're going to be talking with Frank DeMarco about the cosmic internet. The mind is one of the most powerful instruments that we have to work with. Knowing how to utilize it and understanding it is an ongoing process. No one knows it all. So this is a perspective about how the mind, on a level, quantum physics and otherwise, can be understood. Frank DeMarco is a man that has his perspectives I think you will enjoy. And then on Friday, fit, fun, and fabulous at any age. Dr. Hartford is going to be with us. Wellness is important. You need to know how to keep yourself healthy and how you can do it and have a good time in the process. It is vitally important for us to take care of this chassis we call our body. If you don't, you're going to end up not being able to do the things that mean the most to you in life. Life happens sometimes, and there are things that can affect us. But we have a personal responsibility, I feel, to treat our bodies well, because this is what we're going to be living in for a long period of time. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. Telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. Well, I had been doing the horoscope for how to work with other people. This was relating to sun signs. And I had 3 left, and I thought, you know what, I've got to finish this up, because those of you that are Capricorns and Aquarius and Pisces, you may think that I just dropped the whole thing. I didn't. I haven't forgotten you. So I'm going to be sharing that with you right now. So we've covered Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, Virgo, Libra, Scorpio, and Sagittarius. So now we're going to finish with these last 3. Now, what is this in reference to? Well, the sun signs are not the total thing. If you are into astrology, you're far more knowledgeable than I am. But what it does, it gives you, when someone has a sun sign that you become aware of, there are certain traits that you can see. At some times, depending on what else is going on in their astrological chart, it may be in a minor level or a major level, but sometimes these little tips can help. So if you're going to be working with a Capricorn, they're a workhorse. That's right. All business. She's work, 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 work. And she's one. She doesn't like a whole bunch of unnecessary interruptions. The Capricorn personality can be sort of, oh, what do I want to say, rather abrupt, or don't bother me, or just, hey, call me if it's necessary. I fully trust and have confidence in you, and I know you can do it. Talk to me when you get it done. That type of thing. Now, if you have someone of that disposition of Capricorn, just understand, work with this person. Be upfront with them. Say, I want to know what you want me to do, and that Capricorn temperament will say, okay, this is what I want you to do. I want you to do this, this, thus, and so. And if you say, I've got a better idea, your Capricorn personality does not necessarily mind that. They'll say, okay, tell me why it's valid. Then you tell them why it's valid. You say, okay, fine, go for it. That person, all they want are the results. They're interested in your feedback, though, and that's very important. Now, what about someone under the sign of Aquarius? Well, Aquarians are notorious for wanting to do things their way. They have their own kind of inner music. And maybe we'll have a few quirks or two, but by golly, this person will have a lot of patience with you if you're patient with them. Now, sometimes Aquarians seem to be hanging loose. They don't seem to be really well organized. However, an Aquarian sees the big picture, and the Aquarian just wants the ship of action to go full steam ahead. So what you need to do is realize this is how this person may think, so you want to say, okay, how can I keep them on track? A ship without a captain is not going to operate very well if you just leave it running on the currents of the ocean. You have to make sure that you have a direction and you have a destination. So you want to be aware of that. And you might be that person behind the scenes that can enable that Aquarian to achieve what they want. So don't worry about too much as far as the Aquarian goes. They want to get to their objective. So you may have to be diplomatic in approaching them with some new ideas, but don't be afraid to do so. Pisces is the last one. Pisces is a dreamer. Now, it's said that those born under the sign of Pisces are not natural managers. They'd rather be off on their own doing something creative, but they don't want to manage this stuff. So what you want to do, you want to make sure that you give support to that individual so that they are going to end up looking good. Their creative side is absolutely unlimited, and what you want to do is support this person solving their problems. The Piscean wants a person or persons to help them reach their objectives. Brainstorming, right up this person's alley. They really, really like to brainstorm. And just something that was a surprise to me, those born under the sign of Pisces, if they're in a group of people and you're brainstorming, they seem to want to listen to the last person that speaks. So if you are one of those persons in a group and you know that individual that's in charge is of that Piscean temperament, then be the last one that talks and they'll probably remember what you say more than anyone else. So those are some tips right there for you. That finishes up the horoscope. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. And what I wanted to also share with you before we go on to our next break, there are always nice people around. There are always good people, just like my guest said. I mean, here she was in such an ugly situation, and there were people that wanted to help. And I think lots of times we don't realize how people do enjoy being kind. Now, are there schmucks out there? Absolutely. This is not a perfect world. There is always, always going to be someone out there that's going to want to make life miserable for someone. So when somebody comes along that wants to do something nice for you, let them do it. And let me share with you, there's a gal, Shelley Ryan, and she said she had been in extreme back pain, and she made a trip to her pharmacy to pick up her pain medication. However, when she walked inside, she finds that there is a huge, huge line of people. Well, of course, if you've ever experienced back pain, you know how standing aggravates it and the muscle spasms will get just terrible, just absolutely terrible. So she was very stressed. She was wondering how she was going to be able to get the prescription she needed. And a woman that was standing behind her said, "You seem to be in a lot of pain. Do you need to sit down? Why don't you?" And she said, "Oh, yeah, I am." She said, "Okay, I want you to sit down. I don't want you to worry. I'll save your place in line. So just go ahead and sit down. Let those muscles relax." So when it was her turn, the woman who had saved her place said that, "Go ahead, go on up and come on up to the register. You're ahead of me. You just go ahead and do that." So she did. And Shelley said while she was paying her bill, she told the clerk how kind the woman had been and that she wanted to thank her by paying for her prescription. Now think about this. Shelley was so grateful. She said, "I'll pay for this woman's prescription." She had no idea what the cost was. didn't make any difference to her. When this woman found out her bill had been taken care of, she went to Shelley. There were tears in her eyes. She said, "I want to thank you. You have no idea what an answer to my prayers this is." I think Shelley said that we both left feeling better and blessed that day. Sometimes what we do can touch people in ways that we never know or expect to benefit them in the way that it does. That woman probably was in serious trouble financially and may not have been able to pay for her prescription. Little things, you never know. Kindness goes around multiple ways. Donna Sebo, when we come back, a little bit more of this, that, and the other, and hey, give me a call if you want to chat. 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. If you're out looking for a job, maybe you're fortunate and you already have one. Sometimes we feel like we're not making any progress in a career. Sometimes we are in environments that we just feel are dead end. Now, there's a lot of things that can go on. Maybe we're working for some people that are not all up to par. But what I want to share with you is a story about a homeless man that I met at the Renaissance Fair this last weekend. And people have these stories that when they come your way, you really need to listen, because it shows you how important it is for us to have tenacity. This young man, and I'll call him John came over to my booth at the Renaissance Fair, and he was dressed up like a king's guard. And he had a pike, and we were joking about some things, and we were talking about the event and this, that, and the other. And during the course of the conversation, I asked him a question. I honestly don't remember what it was, but he responded with, "I have been a homeless person for 3 years. Well, I looked at him, and he didn't look anything like what I would picture as a homeless person. So I asked him, "What's your story?" Very simple question, 3 words. "What's your story?" And he proceeded to tell me. Now, this young man, John, is from Canada. Born and raised there, he comes over into the United States to participate in these events. And he said he had been working for a company that he didn't like. He didn't like the people that were running it. And they were involved in financial aspects. He was a computer specialist. He was running their operations relative to that particular perspective. And then he learns the Russian mafia is involved with this company. All kinds of things started coming up. He said, "Well, when the stock market in the United States started taking a nosedive and the economy was going into the recession patterning, then," he said, "they started losing their shirt." Well, he was the first one to go. They wanted him out of there. he knew all of the information about the systems. He knew all kinds of stuff that legally could get them into trouble. Well, in Canada, apparently, the way that they fired him was not legal, and he was able to file a grievance, and they were held accountable for their actions. So there was a settlement, and he said, for a while, that was something I could work with, but I couldn't find a job anywhere. There just wasn't any work. And he said he would go from one friend's home to another, and finally, after 3 years, and he said, there were times I didn't even have food to put in my mouth, but I kept applying for work. And whenever I could, I would help somebody out. My friends helped me. I'd maybe stay a month at one place, and then somebody else might say, come on, you can come over and stay at my place. He said, I had a little bit of an income, but he said, I lost everything. I lost my home. I lost my automobile. He said, my life was just a real mess. Well, eventually he was able to move in with his family, and he said he didn't want to be a burden to them. And luckily, after 3 years, he got a job. His job was with a company. He said he just loves these people. They're ethical. They have a wonderful group of products. He said, I am absolutely thrilled with where I'm working. He said, it's funny how life goes, how you can be without everything that so many of us take for granted that it's always going to be there. And he said, everything changed in a very short period of time, but he said, I never really gave up. Now, this is a young man that loves history. He loves to read. He's very well educated, and he's what we call a nerd. He just loves computers. He is someone that is just so knowledgeable. And he said, it feels wonderful to be able to stand again on my own 2 feet the way I really wanted to. And he said, one of the things that I've learned is that you can get through some pretty dark times in very imaginative ways. He said, you have to be resourceful and you have to ask. Not unlike what my guest earlier said. You have to be willing to let people know your need. And if they can help, they will. His story was very poignant to me because so many times we find ourselves in environments or places that we don't want to be professionally. You can make a difference. Opportunity does not come out of nowhere. So if you really want to make an assessment of yourself, to really determine your value, here are some questions that you need to ask yourself. How reliable are you? Are you organized? Are you committed to your responsibilities? Can you be flexible? How positive are you? Are you going to be willing to show initiative, step up to the plate without anybody asking you to? Can you think outside the box? Are you willing to listen to colleagues, to other people? And do you care about other people? These questions may not seem like that big a deal, but they do make a difference. And when you can answer them with integrity and honesty, you're going to find that your opportunity is going to improve as you're willing to improve in certain areas maybe that you're weak. So start looking at what you can do to make yourself an individual that no matter where you put yourself, people are going to say, I want you in my space. I want you to work for me. I want you to be a part of my environment. Habits. Good habits and good attitudes make a difference. And you really need to remember, going an extra mile does make a difference. It sets you up in someone else's eyes, not as a sacrificial lamb, but someone who is willing to give their very best. Don't be satisfied by being another person on the payroll. Become someone that people are pleased to have on the payroll, because you're always giving your best. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. I know we're just about out of time, but don't ever give up on yourself. This young man who was homeless for 3 years, whose life was anything but comfortable, to me was a very special example about how adversity can be overcome You take it one day at a time, one step at a time. You're never limited, really, only by your desire to be the best you can be and to overcome what you're wanting to get through. My guest was representative of that today, and you can be the representative of that in your own life, in the way that you choose. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be with you again tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.